This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 504 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a special one as I get to talk with Brian Level, who is both a writer and an artist. He's got a Zoop.gg project going on right now for the Brothers James, and it's at zoop.gg/c/thebrothersjames. We talk about that book and how it came to be, and how he's going to wrap up that storyline in this Zoop project. We also go into another book that he just had recently released, and that's Batman vs. Bigby, A Wolf in Gotham from DC. Of course, being a big Batman fan, I had to talk with him a little bit about that, and he says a lot of interesting stuff. Some people are just fun to talk with, and that's the way that Brian is, so I hope you enjoy all that he has to say. Once again, I'm working behind the scenes to resolve my voice issues. They're still not finished, but they're slowly getting there. So please pay attention to what Brian is saying and don't let my voice distract you. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Brian Level, who's described on Twitter as a horror cartoonist. Right away, we're in interesting waters with that. comic writer and artist, does Chain to the Grave, Star Wars, DC and Marvel work, and has a Zoop.gg going on right now for the Brothers James. I think I want to make sure I get that exactly right. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Okay, well, okay. Sometimes I do other things like that. My brain goes off in a different direction. So,
story of my life, man.
Well, there's another book that of yours that I want to talk about. Maybe we'll get to that first. You have a book that's coming out from DC called Batman versus Bigby.
That's true.
And I was just telling you before we started to record, I enjoy your art on Batman. I hope that this will get you more Batman work in the future, considering that like 70% of what DC's putting out these days is Batman. And the way you draw Batman, I could take some more of your artwork on The Dark Knight. So I'm pretty happy about that. Talk a little bit about Batman versus Bigby. How did you end up doing that? And how does that... Yeah, how did that fit with your schedule and everything?
So I'm, you know, weirdly, this book just came out, but I've been working on it for quite some time. Mm-hmm. So the details of how, like, the order of which things happen is a little fuzzy to me. Mm-hmm. But I got offered the job not long after I did 2 issues of Lucifer. It was back when Andy Corey was working at DC. He was my editor at the time. So I think he probably had something to do with putting me in the mix there for this book. And then they kind of reached out and said, "Hey, we're relaunching Fables. doing something with Fables. It might have been a re-release. I can't recall what it was, but they said that Bill was writing this, you know, crossover or whatever, and wanted to know if I'd be interested. And, you know, you get the opportunity to draw Bigby Wolf and Batman and Gotham City and all this stuff. It seemed like a no-brainer. Like, of course I'll do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's 6 issues, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Number one has come out. Number two is coming out in the middle of October. So that'll be just a few weeks away after this posts this Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that's great. I really enjoy it. I don't enjoy everybody's Batman. I have to be frank, as a big Batman fan, there are some folks that his ears go up so high, I don't understand how he can walk through a doorway.
Right.
So I'm kind of always looking at that going, no, I don't get that. But yours is just the right size.
Oh, well, thank you.
Obviously, it looks bat-like, and obviously he can walk through doors, thankfully, which is great.
It's funny that you say that, because there's been a couple of people, and this is not me bragging as much as just kind of repeating what other people have said, that some of what I do on Batman is reminiscent to them of Kelly Jones. And I would imagine that some of Kelly Jones's stuff is the stuff that bothers you about him not being able to walk through doors.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the sort of dysmorphic, sort of like hyper, almost grotesquely musculatured, you know, Batman is, the way Kelly Jones draws him and Kyle Hotz. They kind of have these, I don't know, this like hyper muscular Batman with these super pointy ears. But I tend to be a little bit more like, I try to be practical with things too.
Mm-hmm.
So I end up in that middle ground, I think.
That's great. That's great. Now, how far ahead are you? I'm always interested when miniseries like this come out. You have to be ahead to make sure that you don't, they don't have to reschedule you. Have you got all the art done as far as that goes?
So I have 2 pages left to draw and the series is wrapped for me.
Oh,
so
wow.
I got 2 pages left and I'm donezo.
Very good.
Well, I have a cover. I have 1 cover left to do as well.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's not going to take you a lot of time, to be honest.
No. I'll be done sooner than later. That's for sure.
Very good. Very good. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I enjoy, of course, I'm a big Batman fan. Frank Miller said that he became a Batman fan when he opened up a comic and he started to read and he fell in. And that's my experience. I literally just was right into Batman, and I've been that way ever since. I really enjoy him, because his first name or his last name is my first name, and so I like that about him, and that's what attracted me to him. And I always liked the dark part of him, you know. And I always loved the detective. I wish there were more detective stories with him, but
That's always been an appeal for me too. Like, as a horror guy and as a crime guy, you know, it's funny because my shelf is full of crime books and horror books. Like comic books, particularly like pre-code stuff, you know, like a lot of the old EC crime stories, some of the Harvey horror stuff. And like, so that's like some of my favorite stuff. And so Batman tends to, I think, really kind of fall right in with that tradition. And so I was able to kind of like sink my teeth into Gotham and kind of treat it like some of my favorite, you know, old mid-century, you know, pre-code comics, like stuff your parents would get mad if you were a little kid having or whatever.
When we get to the other book, that's going to have a lot of influence in there, because I can tell there's a lot of that in there.
Yes, very much so.
It's going to be something. But it's just a great book. The first issue's out and I'm sold, and I'm just dying to see. Gosh, I hope that they, you know, I wouldn't mind if Fables comes out, and if they do like a once a year Batman crossover with Fables, I wouldn't be averse to buying that. So I think that would be great if you would do the art on that.
Oh, there's so many stories that, you know, would work, because, you know, Batman weirdly is such a perfect, like, you can just put him in any situation, right? Like, so kind of having him with, you know, like the Fables sort of universe is like, seems like an unlikely fit until you start to like unpack it. And it's like, oh, of course, you know?
Well, the thing that gets me about Batman is if I worked really hard, I could end up being close to Batman. I can't be close to Superman. I'm not invulnerable. I can't fly, all that stuff. That's away from me. But I like Batman because if I really worked at it, I could make that happen. Not that it's going to happen at this point in my life, but I'm just fascinated by it. And I always, I love his ability to solve puzzles and to, you know, do those kinds of things and make and figure out mysteries and things like that. Gosh, that just appeals to me so much.
Well, I think he's kind of like the, you know, he's kind of the person that I think a lot of us want to be, you know, is like this sort of, but I think in almost every respect, you know, I think we all want to be like not have to worry about money. We all want to be super smart. We all want to be in great shape. Like we all want to have a moral, like an uncompromising moral code. Mm-hmm. It's funny because like Batman, I would say it's probably, you know, maybe next to Tim Drake in the DC universe is like Bruce Wayne is, you know, like that character I love. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like the Marvel stuff, like I noticed for me, it's like Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if the link is that like Frank Miller worked on both of these guys and kind of helped define a lot of them in a way, or if it's like just that Frank Miller is also attracted to the same thing, which is like these people that you're hyper relatable in some weird way. And, or at least you can imagine yourself in those boots.
Mm-hmm. He's got these huge boots. I always get it. When I look at them, you know, when he's swinging through the sky, you can see the bottom of the boots and I'm always going, my gosh, man, if he lands someplace, he's going to put an imprint somewhere with those boots.
That's actually one of my favorite things to try to do. Like I'm a huge John Romita Jr. fan. Like people love or hate that guy. But I love how like heavy all of his figures feel. Like they all feel like they weigh 1,000,000 pounds. And so like, that's like what I always kind of want to go for in my own stuff is makes everything feel heavy and hefty. And like if it lands on the ground, it could crack the sidewalk, you know?
Mm-hmm. So are they going to collect all these into a collected edition when this is all done?
Somebody sent me a link on Amazon that they're already like taking like pre-orders for the trade.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if it was planning for a trade. I don't know if it does well enough, maybe they'll do a hardcover. I haven't heard one way or another. Like it's not even that I'm not supposed to talk about it. I literally have no idea.
See, I love hardcovers, especially if it's a story I really like. That's the time I buy the hardcovers. I'd rather that they put out the individual issues and let me read the story, and then I know when the hardcover comes out, I want it.
So yeah, there's something nice about that binding too. Like it holds up for multiple reads, and
oh yeah. I have some hardcovers that I just every once in a while. The JLA Avengers one, that huge slot, whatever it is, it's in that slot kind of a cover, and every once in a while I just pull it out and I just stare at it for hours. I just Perez is my guy. I like him. And, yeah, but I, sure. You know, your art is also very close to that. And so you're an inker too.
Wildly flattering.
Well, you're an inker too, aren't you? Right.
That's how I broke in. Yeah. Like comics as an inker, I was kind of working underneath Stefano Godiano. Mm-hmm. When he was, if you're a big DC reader, he was he was Trevor Harrison's inker on Deceased. And you know, worked on Walking Dead for years, Charlie Adler, but Stefano was the guy who kind of taught me everything. He became a pal because I was just kind of an effusive fan of his from his work on Gotham Central. We ended up becoming pals, and he brought me on to work on some Valiant stuff when Valiant relaunched in 2012, and that's kind of the beginning of my career.
Wow. Because I look right up at my bookshelf, and there's Gotham Central looking at me. Because I love
that's
those.
My books. Man, right there.
I love those books. I that's great stuff. I'd like to see you do that. That would be fun to see you if they ever brought it back. Have you drawn
Gotham Rock and Roll? I'd kick ass at that. That's like one of the few things that I'm like, yep, that's my jam.
That would be great. Now I've got to say that I just. You know, Batman's face. And the funniest thing to me about Batman is I like Batman, but I don't like Bruce Wayne.
It always seems to be one of the other people really relate to, right?
Yeah. I like Dick Grayson, but I don't like Nightwing all that much. So there's this weird thing. People always ask me, which one do you most like? And I always go, I'm not like any of them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not my thing. I'm just not like them.
I'm more like Azrael.
Oh, okay.
I love Azrael. Like I relate like way too much to that dude. It's a little scary.
Well, he's, you know, they brought him in to take the place of Batman for a brief time. So
I love a deranged Batman. That's like one of my favorite things. That David Hein, Guillaume March. Run that they did during the Batman Rebirth stuff was really frightening and really excellent stuff. I wish more people read it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of sad about that some of the best Batman stuff is not read, and that yet the more standard stuff seems to be really popular. And I'm always going like, why aren't you reading the more interesting things? But who knows? That's kind of how the way things go. I always know when I like something, it's not going to be popular. I can tell.
Yeah, I always say, like, God, I hope that I don't like this series. Like, I hope I don't like the series too much, or else it's definitely getting canceled.
Yeah, that's me all the time. I'm forever reading, you know, something comes out and I go, wow, that's a great looking book. And then 3 months later, it's gone. And I'm going, I knew I liked it too much.
Well, lucky for you, Batman's almost done, so you can at least you can expect to get the rest of Batman versus Bigby.
That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, this is one, if they put a hardcover right now and I put my vote in for that, I will buy it, because I really enjoy the art and I really enjoy the story. I think it's just going to be great stuff.
Yeah, I think just on a flat out, like on an egoist end, it would be really nice to have a hardcover of the big Batman thing that you did. Like, so yeah. I can like give it to my kids when I get older and like them. Crumbling and like, here, at least, you know, you can show this off and your friends will think you're kind of neat.
Well, it's really a wonderful book. It's really great. If you have not gotten it yet, there's still time, because this is only the first issue has come out. So this is the time to, if you need to go to your comic store, tell them you want that. They can probably back order issue number one and catch the rest of them, which they already know I want the whole series at the comic shop. So I can't wait to get it. It's just going to be wonderful. Now, let me ask you something, because I the way you describe yourself, or it's described in Twitter versus your video on Zoop.gg, you said that you were an artist and a writer, but on Twitter it says a writer and an artist. Mm-hmm. And I always have to ask people, does that mean that you're a storyteller more? Is there one you prefer to the other one, or how's that work?
So it depends on the project, I guess. You know, like sometimes I get hired to do art, like I did on this Batman book, and then with Chained to the Grave, I wrote that. I didn't draw that. On the Zoop project that we're going to be talking about, like I drew 3 issues of that, and then the final issue, or the second to last issue, I co-wrote, and then the last issue, I didn't draw at all. I only wrote it. So I think it's more project dependent. For me, you know, I think I'm at my maximum power when I'm doing both. So that's why I tend to identify myself as a cartoonist, because I do think that that's like where I feel like I'm most myself. But I love doing both, you know?
Yeah. I always ask people that, because there's some people who prefer one or the other. And I always ask them, you know, because like Phil Hester, for example, I always, when I interview him, he always says that, you know, they never get me to do both. They always want one or the other. They never let me write the story and draw it. And I always say, I wish he would, because some of his best stuff has been when he's done both.
Yeah, it's criminal. Phil's one of the best that we have. He's amazing.
Yeah. Too true. It's really, really good. So, all right, Brother James, let's talk about that. First thing I want to talk about, there's I always get a kick with language. Language drives me crazy, because Jordan in a tweet put out, he says, grab a sick remark from Brian Level on the Brothers James Bloodstained variant at Zoop. And I always get a kick because, you know, sick to me means somebody has like vomited all over it or something like that. I have not yet. I'm still in the old days of language and stuff like that. But sick means great and wonderful and excellent and stuff like that. And so when I read that, I had to laugh. I said, yeah, I know what he means, but...
Yeah, so you got to keep in mind, I'm like from like the hardcore punk scene and a tattooer. So like we just have really stupid vernacular that we enjoy. And it's enjoyable for us to just, you know, like kind of have, you get into like, I guess, a clique or a group or whatever, and you kind of develop your own language. And then that becomes pervasive throughout, you know, like throughout that whole subculture or whatever. So, you know, like we, you know, what things that are sick, I guess, is like probably derivative of skateboard culture, which permeated into punk culture, probably started on the West Coast and made its way out here. But it's, you know, I'm a Midwest kid through and through, like cornfield soybean country in Northern Ohio, and still made its way to me, you know?
That's funny, because I often think of language, there's words that people use, and I always have to sit and think about, now, wait a minute, do they mean the old way or the new way? So I always had to, when I read that, I kind of had to smile because I had a feeling I knew exactly what he meant, but I wasn't. Now, let's talk about the history, because this is an interesting book, because you guys had done the first four issues, right? And yes. Not the final one. So talk about how this all started, because this is what, 10 years ago?
That's when it started, yes, about 10 years ago.
Wow. So how did you, how did it start? Who was the one that printed it first? Do you remember?
Yeah, so ultimately the history of this project, from my, the oral history, so I may get some details wrong here, is Ryan Ferrier co-created this project with Michael Walsh, who is a notable artist working in comics today, spectacular artist, and they put this black and white indie crime comic out in the market through a company called 215 Inc., I believe.
Oh, I love that company.
Yeah, and that was ages ago. And I don't know what happened. I think maybe 215 was, maybe they were kind of like doing, I could be mistaken, but I feel like it was a 215 project. Mm-hmm. And then something maybe happened where it ended up not happening anymore because maybe they reduced their line or they were going on hiatus. Mm-hmm. Or I could just be flat out wrong. But essentially, Michael had to leave the book. Mm. And because he had gotten a comic book greenlit at Image Comics with our mutual friend Ed Brisson. And Ed is also an excellent, notable writer in comics today. We're all kind of from that same graduating class of creators, right? Wow. So Ed and Michael, had a great opportunity. And Ryan was like, yes, obviously take this great opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so Mike split. But before he split, they had a talk. And it's like, well, Michael, being the extremely sweet person that he is, was like, let's, see who's going to replace me. Mm-hmm. But him and Ryan both actually had me in mind, weirdly enough. Because I had been kind of floating around Twitter, talking to people and this, that, and the other, that long ago, back in, 2010, 2009, whenever that was. Mm-hmm. And so by the time that Michael had to leave the project, both of them kind of thought of me, and it was, so they reached out to me and I was flattered. And so I said, mm-hmm. okay. And wow. So then I took over for Michael on issue two. I drew three issues. So issues two, three, and four. And we got into the second half of issue four. Should I just keep telling this story? Because I don't.
Sure, go right ahead. Because I'm interested. I want to know what happened.
Okay, because if you have, if you have questions, feel free to interject.
Oh, I will. Believe me, if I need to, I'll pop in.
Okay, good. Because I get to yapping.
That's good.
So with issue four, we got about halfway through, and there was a couple of things that, in the script that I was like, "Hey, can we tweak this?" Like, I feel like with our last issue coming up. Maybe we should do something. He was like, oh yeah. And so we got to talk about that. And then he was just like, why don't you write what you're thinking? And that was kind of my first, I had written some, I wrote a superhero book for myself, and I had written this sort of this other project that a crime project, crime horror sort of thing that never really went anywhere. But I'd never really written anything that was going to be seen by anybody really. And so Ryan was kind of the first person to collaborate with me. And I learned a lot from kind of like his notes. But I kind of wrote some pages at the end of the issue there, probably the last five or six, seven pages. Mm-hmm. And then he tweaked them. And then we finished the issue. And we were both really proud of it and really mm-hmm. excited to get into the last one. But about that time, I started getting a lot of work at Valiant as an inker. And then I got offered a job doing art assists for Michael Lark on Lazarus. Mm. And so it was eating up a lot of my time and it was hard to get around to it. And then I, of course, in the process of that, I ended up getting a book picked up at Image Comics called The Mantle that I was asked to do full art duties on.
I liked that book.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, we liked it too. So it was kind of like, well, Brothers James is going to have to wait. Mm-hmm. To finish it, it's going to take me about a year with having, because I have a, I have a day job where I own a tattoo shop. Mm-hmm. And so, I still go to the tattoo shop and work every single week. Mm-hmm. And so, and I got two little kids and, I got a busy life. Mm-hmm. So, it was going to take us a while. And, 8 years later, I've been working at every company in some capacity and kind of, I'm not good at letting dangling threads out. I'm not good at just letting them go. And so Ryan and I on several occasions had talked about kind of doing it where I'd be able to fit it in, if I'd be able to fit it in. And enough time had passed where Ryan is actually retired from comics. And he kind of wasn't really interested in, trying to write this thing, but also really was like, I want you to, he told me, he's like, I want, I'd like you to write it if you want. And I said, yeah, of course. And so, you know, I found Eamon Hill, who is a local actual art, an actual local artist friend, and also tattooer. And we got to talking, and he was interested in the project, and it kind of all made sense. So I kind of put together an outline. Ryan checked it out. You know, like we talked about the story, this, that, and the other. And I wrote the script, and he went through it. And next thing you know, like we're off to the races with this book, and Eamon has it. He starts drawing on it, and then Zoop shows up. I start asking questions online about crowdfunding, because I was like, well, this thing's gonna, you know, like we want this to come out. I would like to, you know, like crowdfund it would be great. And it would be nice to bring things to a close that had been open for so long. And when I started talking about it, I think it was Jordan maybe, or maybe somebody else. Like, hey, have you heard of these guys or considered these guys? Or maybe Jordan reached out and said, hey, are you familiar with us? And we got to talking, and next thing you know, like they're really cool dudes, and we got along and shared some similar vision. And next thing you know, like we're working together. And then comes the Brothers James Zoop campaign, which is ultimately finishing what we started while also kind of tweaking the existing material to kind of update it for our more modern sensibilities and kind of cleaning up maybe some of the dialogue that doesn't ring as well. And, you know, just kind of putting together essentially a director's cut version of this book.
Because you gave me some of the PDFs to read, which I enjoyed. I mean, it was it's a little much for me, but, you know, once I got into it, I was interested. Yeah, I'm not that much into horror, although some horror books have gotten to me recently. So I was able to get into it, and I really understood what was going on. Now, the one thing I need to talk about, because I always fuss with Zoop about this. They never say what day it's actually going to end, but they say that how many days are left in the campaign. Mm-hmm. And according to my math skills, I think this is going to end on the 20th of October.
Okay.
I think. You might want to double check that, because when I looked in there and I calculated how many days are left and all that stuff, I think it's the 20th of October is when this is going to wrap up. And I've already backed it because I really, like I said, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really something special.
Wow. Thank you, man. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the story only gets wilder. I think I sent you issues 1 and 2, right?
No, I got up to 4, I think.
Oh, I sent you the first 4. Okay, so you finished 1 through 4?
Yeah, holy moke.
Okay, so you know where we left those poor guys.
Yeah.
Before. Heavens. Well, boy howdy, wait till you see where they end up. There. Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
It's already nuts.
Yeah. You're right on October 20th, by the way.
Okay, good. That's my math isn't that great, but every once in a while I figure it out. But I found this story, it was hard to put down. I mean, I was so grateful that I had all the issues possible, because I would have been writing to you and saying, where's the rest of it? Because right. I need to know what was going to happen. I understand I'm one of a pair of identical twins.
Oh, cool.
And so for me, when I saw these two, I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I kind of relate to these. Not that my brother and I would do this kind of stuff, but I can understand the twin business pretty much. So to me, I enjoyed it. I was like, wow, I can see somebody, you know, with twins and going a different direction than my brother and I went. And I just was like gripped. And, you know, I have to say, black and white doesn't always work for me, but this black and white really works. I mean, I was just, I couldn't put it down. I was just literally, I went from one to the other. I was like, okay, number two. Okay, let me get, where's three? Okay, there's three. Good. Let me get into that. Because I just could not stop reading it. I was just.
Oh, thank you.
It's really tremendous stuff. I mean, not only the art, but the storytelling. And the characters are really, I mean, the two brothers. Like I said, being one of a pair of identical twins, I can relate to how those two interact and react with each other. And so let me read this one thing off the cover of the first one. It says, hot asphalt and hotter steel, twin vengeance on the road straight to hell, it says on there. That's pretty accurate. I thought that was,
yeah, these guys wrote that aren't, they don't make great, that was me, they don't make good choices. like, but they commit to their choices. So there's, you know, that's a, if there's one thing I've learned in my, you know, I know a lot of sets of twins, actually, like I can name three off the top of my head, weirdly.
Oh, wow.
Like my neighbors in particular. But, you know, I've always found like there's like such a distinct difference between the twins in my I feel like twins get lumped into, you know, I'm obviously I can't speak to you about your life experience, but I feel like for me there's always this perception that twins are kind of like two peas in a pod, when in reality everybody's an individual,
right?
And so you have these like to have twins, I think you expect like these tag team partners, when in reality like that it's not always that way, you know, like these are just fully functional human beings that are dealing with their own motivations and traumas and desires and all that. And I think Jack and John have very different personalities, and the story I think tries to exploit that and show how that can work for good or bad.
I got a kick out of the last name James, like Jesse James setup. I really got a kick out of that, because that explains a lot of their characters.
Mm-hmm. And then, when you get to issue 4, their names become a little bit more
important.
It's a weird little book.
It's unlike anything. It felt to me like this should be a movie.
Oh, well, I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I'm going to take it as one.
It is. I mean, I could not, like I said, I love when action goes on and I can't put it down. And that's the way it was with this. I just literally, I couldn't figure out what was going to happen next. That's another thing I really liked, because sometimes I pick up a comic and I can tell you what's going to happen in the next 10, 15 pages. And I hate that. I don't want to know what's going to happen. And I had no clue.
Yeah, we throw a lot of curveballs, and I think the curveballs continue to show up in the last issue in some pretty big ways. I'm really excited for people to read the last issue, because I do some, you know, I'm not Ryan, so I don't write like Ryan. Mm-hmm. So like you get, you know, like I try to maintain the voice and make it pretty seamless. And Ryan's been over everything and offered notes and done all, you know, like we wrote it together. Mm-hmm. But there's you know, like some of the choices are very much like, what in the hell? Like, that is wild, you know. But I feel like everything in the book's been pretty wild, you know. Like, I don't think people expect a death cult to show up, but they show up, you know.
I mean, there's so many things that get happens out of the blue, and I'm sitting there going, and the best part is, though, it makes sense still.
When it circles all the way back around, you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Like, this makes perfect sense.
Yep. See, a lot of times things just appear out of nowhere. And I always am kind of like, I would have liked a little bit of stuff. But you have put, I don't know who exactly put in the stuff at the beginning. But from the beginning through the fourth issue, there are, you're laying out some of the stuff that's going to happen. Because I can see it starting to develop, and I'm just like, wow. I just can't. I don't want to spoil stuff, because there are wonderful things that go on, and I'm just literally shocked at from thing to thing. And I like to be surprised. Let me tell you something. When something surprises me, I love that, because I have been so unsurprised.
Well, I'm flattered. That makes me excited. You know, Ryan and I are both huge fans of 70s movies, and I will say that I feel like a lot of 70s stuff that we like is very lawless and surprising and kind of wild. So we wanted to channel some of that, like, 1970s sort of gritty, you know, action, thriller, crime, horror, you know, sort of energy in this book.
Mm-hmm. I tended to identify with the dark-haired other brothers.
I think he's our way in a lot of ways. I think, you know, I think like John is like more like all of us. Like he's a little bit more of a thinker. He's a little bit more of a feeler. He's a little bit more like nervous about bad choices. But I also think like everybody needs a Jack to kind of like push through things. Like Jack's that guy. It's best that Jack's in the driver's seat, and it's best that John's there calling, you know, like armchair quarterback, you know, or else the job will never get done.
Now, the girl surprised me.
Surprised a lot of people, I think.
I was very surprised by her, and I liked her, I have to say.
Yeah, I love Tracy. She's actually probably my favorite character in the book.
Oh, really? Because she's kind of interesting. I'm trying to remember. It's been a couple of days since I read it. Is she a sister?
It's complicated, because I don't necessarily want to spoil anything for anybody.
Okay. Okay.
She's a complicated character, and you know, the rest of, you know, you get a lot of shocks with like her situation, but the way everything winds up in 5 When it all wraps up, I think everybody will be really satisfied with how Tracy fits into this story.
Okay. Because I also loved the masthead with the target for the letter O.
That's, you know, that's Ryan's design. Ryan was a graphic designer before he was a comic book writer. Mm-hmm. And that logo treatment was there was an original logo treatment, which if you look at the issues I sent you, mm-hmm. the old covers, mm-hmm. I kind of center justified it and made some tweaks just for mm-hmm. this new treatment. Like, mm-hmm. so it looked a little bit more 70s, but if you go to those old treatments, it's a little bit off kilter. And, mm-hmm. I just made some minor changes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's all him, man. He's a genius.
What about the car? I mean, you know, the car, I mean,
Henrietta.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, the thing that's interesting to me, and I mean, Supernatural, as long as it was on the car, was like a star of the show. Everybody loved the car, and I feel that way about this car. But yeah, see, even with Batman, though, I'm a big Batmobile fan. I always thought that the Batmobile was as big a star as Batman was.
Mm-hmm. And I hope you like the way I draw the Batmobile.
I do. I think it's great. Oh, my gosh, I love that. But I also like this car. I was very, you know, it's one of those kind of older, I can't think of the exact word, but it's a
muscle car.
Yes, that's it. That's exactly what it is. And it's so perfect for these two guys to be driving around in this car.
It's a Dodge Challenger, mm-hmm. Which I think is maybe Ryan's favorite car of all time, if my memory serves me correctly. So like Henrietta was established before I took over the book. But, you know, what's funny is bringing me on board. My father, like in real life, is a race car engine mechanic and car like engine builder. Mm-hmm. So like I grew up around Dodge Chargers and Super Bees and Barracudas and stuff like that. Not that we had a bunch of cars, but my dad was either always repairing them or, you know, fixing and selling them. And now he builds sprint car engines and super modified engines for race cars. So like my dad's like, I've always been around these cars. So for Ryan to have such an affinity for this vehicle is kind of like, well, of course, like I, you know, like, of course, I fit in really well in this sort of scenario, you know. And, you know, we even bring in – the cars have always been a big deal in this, like cars and motorcycles. There's a – I think we have a Valiant in the book. There's a Shelby Cobra in the last issue. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of bitching cars.
It's a wonderful thing because, you know, a lot of – especially guys, we take to cars.
Sure.
You know, I like the cars. I mean, my favorite thing in the, I always grimace when I watch the old Batman with Adam West. But the one thing I loved was the Batmobile. If you watch the very first episode, you know, before they put the red stripes on there, they shot some footage. And if you watch in that very first episode, you'll see the car without the red lines on it. Driving around.
No kidding. That's interesting.
We were watching it and I went, oh, I said, there's no red lines on there. Rewind that. And we rewound it and looked at it and we were like, wow.
Amazing.
That is smooth. So yeah, if you get a chance to go and watch it, I highly recommend it because it was just, I was stunned when I saw that. So, but that's the way really with this car too. I was really taken by the car because they just, it fits their personality so well.
Well, I also think that the fact that the car doesn't always have a great fate also it fits their personality as well. They just like their lives, they give that car a bit of grief.
Oh, goodness. But that's like with Supernatural, the same kind of thing.
We got a lot of comparisons to Supernatural because of the characters look a little similar and the car and stuff.
That's good. I mean, you know, Supernatural, how many years was that on the CW, for heaven's sakes? That was
like 17 years or something.
Crazy. Something like that. You know, if that's a good comparison, you know, if people want to do that, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain.
No, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
I will say the story couldn't get much further from Supernatural.
Well, the characters are very different from characters on Supernatural. And that's okay. I mean, I'm fine with that. I don't want everything to be Supernatural. I want, you know, I enjoyed the car. I enjoyed the way that these guys act and interact and being a twin. I could kind of see how these guys, you know, how they got the way they are. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I really enjoyed it. I want to read this a little bit on the Zoop page that I really liked. I want to make sure I read it because it says some really interesting things about it. It says, at its beating heart, the Brothers James is about family, loyalty, and sacrifice. Along that come furious car crashes, grindhouse violence, classic rock and roll, and a few road beers to wash it all down. And then it goes to the next paragraph. It says, between twists, turns, and double crosses, women with secret motives, blood cults, and cops that can't be trusted, boy, is that true. The Brothers James keeps your butt in the seat and your head spinning till the bitter end. That is really, did you write that too?
I did.
Okay, yeah, that is perfect. That's exactly what for that comic. That is just ideal.
I feel like with Brothers James, like 90% of like pitching it is pitching its feeling, not even necessarily its content. Mm-hmm. You know, because if I sit there and tell you like, oh, it's about two brothers who are dealing with their issues together and getting revenge on the people that killed their parents, like, yeah, you're getting an idea. Mm-hmm. But if you can like, but it's like the RPMs are like in the red zone. Like this thing is like foot on the gas, full speed ahead. So like, if you can understand that it's fast as hell and it's mean and it, you know, like, and it's funny and it's, you know, it's kind of like, I think it's more of a tonal thing. Like I think the book has a interesting tone that's quite enjoyable. The narrator, I love the narrator who is just kind of this, kind of hillbilly, kind of cheeky character.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to find out who that is? I don't need to know right now, but is that something we're going to get revealed or is that just going to,
No, that's just our narrator.
Okay. Well, that's good. See, it works for me because I get a huge kick out of the way he describes things.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to kind of give it like, it adds so much flavor. I think without it, it would just feel like another kind of self-serious, you know, like crime, gritty crime story. And I think it adds a little bit of levity and kind of like kind of how your friends talk to you in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got a kick out of the name of the group, the satanic group, the Lucky Devils.
Oh yeah. 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 They're rotten to the core. Those guys.
Oh, heavens. I mean, they just, oh man, the stuff they do, I'm sitting there going, what in the world are they doing? That's crazy people. So it's funny. You think the Brothers James are sort of outrageous and outlandish, but then these guys come along and they make them look sort of sane by comparison, which is amazing. You know,
I work in a tattoo shop and I've known a lot of bikers and you get a whole lot of, you get a varied showing of personality types there too. You know, sometimes you get some real relaxed guys that just like to ride motorcycles with their friends. And then you get some guys that are intense. You know, like, you're like, whoa, buddy. So we kind of try to show, you know, a little bit of like the fun loving bikers that end up becoming violent or like all the way down to like these people are like in a cult, you know?
Yeah, it's just amazing. Now, as far as things go, obviously that's going to end on the 20th, like we talked about. When do you expect the book to be ready for delivery to those of us who are backers?
So it's being drawn now. And I think that we will have, I think that delivery is January.
Oh, okay.
So we won't have to wait too god-awful long since we're in October now or just about in October.
If you could ever get it done before Christmas, that would be ideal.
Well, that would be sweet. I know I plan on kind of like, I will have some involvement in the art process. I'm not drawing at all, but there's like, you know, I'll be jumping in with assists here and there because, you know, Eamon's a busy guy and I'm a busy guy and, you know, there'll be little things like I'll be helping with toning and other different things. So we should keep a nice steady clip.
This would have been ideal around Halloween.
Oh yeah.
You know,
well, it doesn't, you know, it's funny. It'd be great for Halloween. It also feels like a summertime book in a weird way too.
Well, all the action and the stuff going on, punching and kicking and guns and man alive. And it's warm pretty much. That's a warm weather type of a story. So you kind of get it. So God, it's so much fun to read though. I just could not stop reading it. And I think other people are going to get the same. If you get a chance, it's the Brothers James. Go to zoop.gg/c/thebrothersjames. And you want to be sure to get there before the 20th because you want to make sure you get it because you haven't gotten your goal quite yet, but you got 50 supporters, which is a great number to have. And so I think you're going to make this by the 20th, but let's not wait until the 20th. Let's get it there and make this happen before that. So Brian here don't have to do that refresh thing where you get the heart attack when nobody's done it in the last half an hour. Oh no.
You know? Oh, man, I feel like you've been leaning over my shoulder watching me at the computer.
Well, I've often talked to people who do these kinds of projects, and they often sit there and refresh, and right. Nobody does it in a half hour, hour, and they start to sweat, and they start to worry. But I think This is a great book. I think this is going to be great fun. I think this should be a movie. I really do.
I mean, you know, like I'm not a filmmaker, but you know, obviously if somebody wants to buy it up and put some cool dudes in a muscle car and have them around blow people away, I'm going to sign off on that.
It's great. It's great fun. It's just, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not a big horror fan usually, but this one, once I was in it, I could not let go. I just had to keep going. I was grateful. I got to the end of the fourth. And now the bad news was that was the fourth one, but I knew there was still story to go, but at least I got to see that. So I was very happy that at least I got as far as I could go. So it's just wonderful stuff. It's just, are you planning to do any more of this kind of storytelling, or is this kind of, this is the one you want to do in this genre?
If it were up to me, all I would do is crime and horror books.
Okay.
Not because I dislike superhero books, I quite enjoy them. But there's a very special place in my heart where I can be my most expressive within those subgenres. So, you know, it's nice to work on Batman because it's still essentially a crime book, you know? So it's like, if someone says like, oh, if you could work on any big two property, it's going to be, you know, something in the crime and horror genres within those sort of companies, like your Daredevils and Moon Knights and, you know, like Batman or Azrael or Deadman or something like that.
Yeah, you should bring Azrael back.
Oh man, I would love that. I would, you know, like there's a couple of people that I would jump all over, like Azrael, the Spectre. Those would be like, that'd be stuff I'd be all over.
Hope DC is listening. I'd like to read those.
And maybe they'll let me write someday, even if it's just for one of those short story anthologies, hey?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of storytelling going on these days. You know, shorter stories, longer stories. As long as it's a good story, I'm interested. I want to read it. I buy a lot of DC, to be honest. I know you've done a lot of Marvel. They had a list of all the Marvel books that you've done. And there's a lot that you have done. So that was kind of cool. You even did an Immortal Hulk.
I did. Well, it was just one. I only did one page of Immortal Hulk. It was kind of a bummer. I would have loved to have done more. I will say, if you don't like horror generally, do not read my Separation Anxiety Absolute Carnage story, because it's one of the things we've ever done. I can't, like, still to this day, like, whenever I get interviewed, like let's talk about this, because what happened there and why did Marvel let that happen? Like, that was so messed up. So,
well, the Marvel will occasionally, I think it depends on who the editor is. Sometimes the editors will let the crazy stuff go out, and that's fine. Immortal Hulk, I have to say, was a crazy book.
Oh, what a great book. Jeez.
I liked the first five issues when he was basically, you know, he was going after people that he thought were worse than he was, and he would go after them and do them. But then after that, it became more of a superhero book, and I was less interested. So I still bought them all. I mean, I'm going to go all the way through to 50, but I really, those first five issues, I really enjoyed, because to see him go after the bad guys, as bad as he was, I thought that was a really interesting development. So I like that.
Are you a big Hulk fan?
I'm a reasonably good Hulk fan. He changes so much, it's hard for me to know which Hulk it is. Is it the gray Hulk? Is it the green Hulk? Is it the Bruce Banner Hulk? Is it the, which one is it? So I'm always kind of like, and Peter David, who used to write it, he had track of the sales. And when the sales started to dip, he would change. He would make a change in the Hulk, so that the sales would go back up.
There's a like, one of my favorite runs of the Hulk was Bruce Jones's run that I think started in like either 98 or 99, maybe, or maybe it was 2000. My brain stinks at remembering things, but ultimately it was kind of like the general premise was that the Hulk killed a child by accident via collateral damage of a Hulk rager, you know? And so he essentially goes into hiding. And so it's Bruce Banner kind of using like meditation and all these other techniques to try to like control the Hulk. And the Hulk very rarely shows up in the book. Man, it's just really intense horror and suspense. And so, like, you get a lot of Doc Samson kind of, like, trying to find Banner and, you know, like, these different sort of villains. It's one of my favorite takes on Hulk that I've ever read. And I think there's, like, 9 volumes of it. And I would say the first 5 or 6 are just top-notch Hulk stories.
Wow. Okay. Because I might have to get a hold of that, because I don't think I read those ones. That was one I didn't get to.
I think that they sold quite well, I think, when they when they were coming out. So you can get the first 3 or 4 trades for, like, really cheap.
Okay.
Printed like crazy.
Okay, well, I gotta ask you, and I don't expect you're all wise and all that good stuff. What do you think about Donny Cates taking over the Hulk?
So full disclosure, Donnie's a good friend of mine.
Okay.
That said, if I can speak objectively about Donnie, Donnie, I think, is one of the few writers. I think the secret to Donnie's success is how visual of a thinker he is. And so, like, in the Hulk, like, is like, well, like, that book thrives when it's a visual book, in my experience. Like, that's why I think Immortal Hulk was so strong, because it was an extremely visual book. There's a lot to look at. And so I think Donnie taking over on the Hulk makes perfect sense. I think it's going to be a bit more, probably more cosmic. It's probably going to be a bit like bigger in, well, I don't know. I don't know how you can make something bigger in scope than what Immortal Hulk was. I mean, he eats the Metatron, for God's sakes, but, you know, there's just something Donnie brings, like an energy, like an exuberance to everything. So I think that it'll be a nice shift from what Al was doing. I mean, in fairness, God love Donnie. Al's Hulk, I could read forever. I think it's so sad and so frightening, and that's exactly what I want to read in the Hulk.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to see, because I jumped on the Immortal Hulk because everybody was talking about it, and I was intrigued by it. But like I said, I started to lose interest about issue 20 and stuff like that, because it seemed about the same. But to me, that was just me. But other people really loved it. And I mean, I know people who just swear by that book. It's like one of the best books out.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Okay. Well, that's good. Because, you know, I stuck with it. I keep reading it. I didn't like when the Avengers got beat up by the Hulk. I was kind of like, superhero stuff. But other than that, it was fine. But well, let's see. Now you've got the Batman almost done. How? What other projects are you working on?
So I have I'm a busy guy. So I've got a project that I cannot speak a lick about.
Okay.
But that's I will say I'm writing and drawing it.
Oh.
So that's very exciting. That's all I can say.
Oh, wow.
So that's a real thrill for me. I've got another book that I've co-written with Ryan Ferrier. So Ryan has retired from comics, but we wrote this years ago. And it's been in production for a few years. And it is a graphic novel that's been, you know, we haven't announced it yet, but that'll be announced soon, I believe.
Right.
And so that'll be a graphic novel that I am with a previous collaborator. I don't know what all I'm supposed to say, but a previous artist collaborator is going to be drawing it. And for anyone that's familiar with my work, when I say she is excellent, then you'd probably be able to figure out who it was.
Okay.
So I have a graphic novel coming out that I've co-written. I have a series that I'm like doing full art duties on that includes coloring and lettering. Those are the two things that are guaranteed. I have another thing that I think is going to happen, but I'm not 100% sure. And I may be doing another crowdfunding campaign at some point in the future for a book that is finished. That actually I didn't do, but that I'm going to kind of release on my own, sort of like, if you look at the Brothers James, there's this little publishing company called Dream Cult. And that's my little publishing imprint that I self-publish things. And
gotcha.
I've got these really surreal horror books that I put out all the time. Whenever I have extra time, that are kind of like short stories and just little mini nightmares. So those are all kind of Dream Cult projects. So I have another one that's, I may be crowdfunding in the future too. Already finished.
That's cool. Well, see, crowdfunding to me is one of the greatest advancements in comics, because story like the stuff you're doing, we would never get to see if it hadn't been for crowdfunding.
Right.
So to me, I want to see more crowdfunding. I don't want to see less. So when Zoo came along and they were starting up a whole nother company, I was like, wow, good. Keep it up. Let's get as many crowdfunding things going, so we can choose which ones we want to support. And I just think it's a wonderful thing. So
yeah, I hope they keep building their audience too, so they become like a bit of a hub where people can come and look around and be like, oh, what new comics is Zoop doing? You know, I got to say, they just announced that they're going to be having that John Paul Leon artist edition of, of Wintermen. Mm. And it's like, oh my gosh. Like, if you've never read Wintermen, holy cannoli. Mm. What a book. So big recommend on it's funny because I should be promoting my own book, but John Paul Leon is just one of the greatest to ever draw comics. So to have an artist edition of one of his books is huge.
I have supported every single one that Zoop has done so far. So I'm like, I saw that. I already put my name on to be notified when it comes out. So I'll be after that too. I have a feeling I haven't read that one. That's one I haven't done. So I will definitely get on to it. Now, if people want to keep up with what you're doing, when you make the announcements and stuff, how do we follow you on social media?
So you can follow me on Twitter. It's just my name, Brian_Level. So at Brian_Level. I have my tattoo shop has an Instagram account, and I post comic stuff on there too. And that's my tattoo shop is called Illuminaut, like Illuminaut, like kind of like if we're comics fans, we think of Juggernaut, Illuminaut tattoo. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
You can look me up there, or you can probably just search for my name and it'll show up as Illuminati Tattoo. I'm on Facebook, but I'm just kind of haunting that place. I don't really engage.
And just the opposite. I tend not to do Twitter so much. I tend to be Facebook more.
They're all essentially like, I would liken it to like it, every religion has their own version of hell. So like that's the social medias are just different variations on hell.
Yeah.
I also have a newsletter where I get like really personal, and that's Thrones, like what a king would sit in, thrones.substack.com.
Oh.
And so you can subscribe to that. And I will be doing some weird things there too, like releasing some comics and just not like the James Tynion, Donnie Cates, Ryan Stegman. Like I'm not going to be doing something of that size, scope, and ambition, but instead just kind of a place to release things that are a little bit more off kilter, a bit more niche, where, maybe it might be hard to find a place to do it otherwise. So that's just called Thrones, thrones.substack.com.
I've got to ask you real quickly before I let you go, why go to Substack? What is it about Substack that appealed to you to do that? Because we've got a lot of people. You talked about James Tynion. There's several other people who are on there. What is it about Substack that appealed to you to go and do some work through them?
Well, Substack kind of happened to be a weird solution for a weird problem, which was I wanted to have a newsletter, and like I could have done like the MailChimp thing. Right. And that was what I was looking at. But I liked the fact that Substack has it archived as a website, essentially like a blog. And so if someone missed a newsletter, they could go back to all the old ones. And then they also, I was thinking about doing a Patreon. So it's like, okay, I could do a MailChimp and a Patreon, but then the Substack seemed to kind of be a mashup of the two. Cause like I wanted to have a place like a Patreon, even if it was just free where I could release, you know, like, just whatever I wanted to there and not have to worry about a publisher, but just have a place where people could rely on, going there. But see, another thing about Patreon is it feels like it's harder to navigate, to find new things. And Substack seems to be a little easier to surf, around and find things. So it just kind of seemed to be I wouldn't say that it was a perfect mixture of things because nothing's perfect, but it seemed to be a better solution for my purposes.
I'm going to ask you a question. If you don't want to answer it, don't answer it. Is Substack paying you like they are, Mr. Tynion?
They are not.
Okay. Okay. Just interested in that. I'm just fascinated by what it is about Substack that draws people to them and why that some people get paid and some don't. So
my choice to use Substack was purely pragmatic. I had no investment in the format or the platform whatsoever. I would say that there's probably some appeal in that I'm a kind of a relatively mainstream creator. And so it might like kind of lumping yourself in with other mainstream creators could potentially draw attention. But I feel like that's even more ghoulish than what I was originally thinking. I originally just kind of thought like I would like to have a blog. I would definitely like to have a newsletter more than anything. But then also like it would be nice to be able to post comics on here eventually if I want to. And it seemed to kind of hit all those buttons for me.
Great. As long as it worked for you, that's the important thing.
And it would be, maybe I can activate it to where that I can actually start taking payments if I have it, if I'm committing enough time and energy to the content for the place, we'll see how that goes. But no one's paying me as of right now.
Okay, well, you know, I don't know much about that. That's why I asked about it, because I'm just kind of curious. What it is that draws people there and makes people go there? But you're right, it provides two things that are helpful to you to get the word out and things like that, which is great.
And if I'm being honest, I don't think I've earned really, like I don't know if I've earned readers' trust enough to even start like to even put me in a position in that way. Like if you look at guys like James, like he's consistent as it comes. Like he's a consistent talent. Mm. Same thing with Donnie and Ryan. Like all those people have earned audiences, and I've kind of like tended to kind of float around and kind of like do these sort of different projects. And I don't know if even people know what to expect from me. So part of having the Substack was almost to craft and solidify what it is you can expect from me, you know?
See, that's a good thing, though. I would rather not know exactly what you're going to provide. You know, I like to be surprised. And I said, like, the Brother James just surprised the heck out of me.
So oh, I would say, like, yeah, I don't think my artwork or the stories that I tell will ever not be surprising. I just mean, like what types of things I'm interested in and, like, what kind of person I am, even. Because, like I said, the Throne Substack is pretty personal. So I get in pretty heavy on, like what matters to me and how I feel about myself and how I feel about my work. And just, I mean, it's a personal thing. And I get into stuff that's kind of hard to talk about in social media, like religion and, you know, my relationship to it and all kinds of stuff, you know?
Okay. Well, sounds like fun. I'll have to go there and track you down because it sounds like stuff I'd like to, I'd like to have a look at it because it sounds interesting. I like people who I don't agree with all the time.
Sure.
Let me say, because a lot of people they want to read people's stuff who they agree with constantly. And I actually learn things from people who I don't agree with all the time. So I prefer to talk with or listen to people who don't give me the exact same point of view that I have. So that's kind of me. So I think that would be fun for me.
I was going to say, like I don't tend to be real prescriptive, like with the stuff that I say. Like I don't think that it's right or wrong to tell people what you think they should be doing or not doing. I think that's situational. And so like when someone says you should do this or you should not do that, like, I think that's fine. I struggle with telling myself those things. So I don't do it for other people. And so like disagreeing with me, I don't think really means that like I think people might find things that I say disagreeable or agreeable, but I don't even think that they'll necessarily even relate them to their lives or any universal sort of experience. Cause I'm coming from a very like specific and insular place when I write.
Cool. Well, you know what? I think we need more diversity and opinion than less. So I would like to read that.
Well, hopefully you enjoy it.
I think I will. I think it's going to be fun. And again, it's on Zoop, and it's at zoop.gg/c/thebrothersjames. It's a great book. I highly recommend that you get in there and do it and back it. We need to see this happen because I think that this is, I got to see the end now. I have to know what's going to happen because those first four issues just grabbed me. And I think other people will enjoy it just as well. So, Brian, just keep up the wonderful stuff. I think you're doing good things. I liked it as something I don't know what's going to come.
Thank you so much, man. It's weird to say, but like, I appreciate you enjoying the black and white because I love black and white comics so much. Like, I feel like not every comic is made for black and white. So it makes me happy to hear that it brought you joy too, because I think it's a great looking book.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.